This week, the head of the UN assistance mission in Iraq said the liberation of Mosul is, to use his word, imminent. He was also clear that IS militants continue to use civilians as human shields. Local physician Tom Crabtree would know something about that. He recently returned from Mosul, where he treated survivors caught between advancing Iraqi forces and the extremist group holding West Mosul, including the Old City. We last talked with Dr. Crabtree in 2015 after his 6 months combating Ebola in Liberia. We sat down a few days ago to talk about his latest experience in Mosul, and I asked him how he made the decision to go.
Well, I'm part of an organization that supports healthcare across the world in crisis situations, and we had a contract and a responsibility to support the WHO, who have two hospitals there, and we were asked to both staff and run it. And as one of the principals of the organization, I had a duty to both go and support it, but also there was a short-term need for a chief medical officer, so I stepped up to do that.
You bring up the point that this is a contracted situation, and although that may be the case, still walking into a very dangerous situation, as you found in Mosul, is still something that might give some other people pause, and yet you continue to do it. Why?
Well, if you can do something like this and you have the skills to do it, I think you have a responsibility to do it. These people have nothing in terms of any aspect of their life, but especially health care. And we're able to bring the world to their doorstep and maybe alleviate some of their pain and suffering to a degree.
The international group that comes in to help sees now mostly women and children, because that's what's pretty much left.
Correct.
in the Old City. We are told that it may not be too many more days until the Old City may be liberated or not, but they, for the next, you know, foreseeable future, they're squeezed between ISIS on the back end and threading kind of through them and advancing Iraqi forces and Americans on the front end. How are these people faring, and are they still trying to get out even to their own peril?
They absolutely are trying to get out even at their own peril, because they have no option. I mean, they have no food, no water. They're under the threat of constant violence. They are specifically threatened with death threats if they would even think about trying to escape. And they really have no other choice. The adult males are absent for various reasons. So the moms and their, you know, 6-7 kids do their best either under cover of darkness or whatever to try and escape. And unfortunately, they get shot at and sniped at and suffer terribly as they try to escape.
Which makes the point that 2 miles can be an absolute eternity.
Speaking of eternity, I'll give you a quick story. There was a group of kids that showed up in a couple ambulances, 10 of them, that the building that they were living in, which had no food or electricity or running water, had been collapsed by explosions from either side. They were caught right in the middle of the battle. And they were trapped for 4 days, which without food or water in a dark hole had to be an eternity. Finally, they were liberated and were able to come and receive care. Their broken bones and scrapes and bruises, they were all going to do fine, though. But it's a nightmare for all of them.
How would you describe most of the injuries that you see? Are we talking about kids who have been shot at and parents who have been shot at, largely women, burns? What did you see?
It's the great, great majority of them, of the injuries, are from either shrapnel, from mortars or artillery, or explosions from IEDs, improvised explosive devices, or gunshot wounds. It's a pretty even mix. And unfortunately, the gunshot wounds especially tend to be very purposeful. Their kids are targeted and they're shot.
Targeted in their head, body?
Everywhere. But
With the intent to kill.
I've never in my life seen so many gunshot wounds to the head in a pediatric population.
Of those that you've been able to treat, what would you say the prognosis would be for many of them?
Fortunately, the prognosis is actually better than you'd think for two reasons. One, the very frontline care we're able to give them is quite advanced. It's almost Western-level operating care and ICU care for the first 72 hours. And then we do have a pretty good referral system in place where they, by various transportation mechanisms, get to hospitals in Erbil which is a very advanced tertiary care or advanced Western-level care facilities.
And then what happens to them after they're eventually released?
They're in... That's when the suffering probably really begins. They have no home to go back to. Their families are destroyed. They have camps that maybe they can move to. But the refugee situation, the camp situation, is going to be another one of these long stories where it will be years before they can, if ever, return to any semblance of normalcy.
The great swath of refugees that may be spread through a diaspora that we've yet to even imagine. As we look at Iraq and what may happen as we go forward, will you go back?
I absolutely expect to go back. This particular project has a defined timeline of about 3 to 6 months. Our responsibility is to turn the facilities over to the Iraqis themselves, and I think they'll be ready to do that within 3 to 6 months. But the battle's not over. The need for longer-term health care and specialized services will exist, and somewhere, somehow, whether it's supporting our own State Department or supporting the WHO in these sort of crisis situations, I think I'll be back.
When you do go back, you may find that things very much have not changed, and that regardless of who may be in power, you're still looking at a scorched landscape where there really are no buildings, where everything is blown out. You've seen that this last trip. How will this place begin to serve such a huge population of people who will be in physical need of basics, let alone the medical care that you need to give?
It'll have to be a combined effort between the Iraqis and the global assistance community. Mosul had a fantastic medical school. They have a number of very skilled and advanced healthcare practitioners. But as you pointed out, there's no infrastructure. It's destroyed. It's just rubble. So that'll take years to rebuild. Unfortunately, the money probably won't be there, certainly with the Iraqis. They have a number of competing priorities. And they, as you know, northern Iraq is very oil rich, but oil prices are depressed, so that'll be a challenge. So the world will have to step in and help.
Some would say that's going to be a big problem with so many other issues facing individual countries and the world at large, and that this, as you say, may go on for years, possibly decades. For you now, having just come back from this, what is it that you think we don't know about the situation that you saw with your feet on the ground that we need to better understand?
That the solution is not something we can impose. That's obviously a bit of a political, personal view, but it's something that has to be figured out locally. And getting to know the Iraqis, getting to know my Kurdish friends, and remember that's the Kurdistan area is right next to the Iraqi area of Mosul. You know, there's some ancient disagreements and concerns that really compromise their ability to work together. And it really is beyond our comprehension. It's something at best we can just support as apolitically as possible, but to try to impose any ideas is probably folly.
Which is to say, if we read between the lines, that is going to continue.
Correct.
And how we learn to walk between those lines in offering aid is going to be a delicate dance.
It certainly is.
Well, I wish you all the best in your part of it, knowing that you are going to go back at some point. And thank you so much for giving us your feet on the ground perspective.
No, thank you, Beth Ann. It's a pleasure to be here and to share the story of a place that's literally halfway around the world, but something we should know about.
Dr. Tom Crabtree is the group medical director and a principal of Aspen Medical International. He specializes in plastic and reconstructive surgery and is a retired U.S. Army colonel. He recently returned to Hawaii after working with an international medical team in Mosul, Iraq.